20 political assassinations in 10 states, 6 civilian murders and injuries, and 70 kidnapping and extortion cases. These are just the reported numbers on the violence that has erupted in the lead-up to the Mexican elections, which just recently passed on June 7th. It has been alleged that Mexico's controversial president, Enrique Peña Nieto, and his ruling party, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, the PRI, have been complicit in this so-called drug cartel political violence against their own people in the lead-up to these elections, and for the overall humanitarian crisis that has now typified Mexico for decades. Yet Peña Nieto and the PRI were able to resecure a majority in Congress during these narco or so-called necro elections. Is all hope for an end to the state-perpetrated cruelty in Mexico lost now that the PRI is back in power? Will the violence inevitably continue? What can be done to stop this humanitarian crisis that the international community has chosen to shamefully ignore? My name is Emma Nordunken, and I was joined first with Andalusia Noll, a freelance multimedia journalist based in Mexico City, and then Dagoberto Acevedo, a member of the Comité des Droits Humains Amérique Latine, who shared their personal insights on these very questions.
Sunday, which was the election day, which is June 7th, the 43 families of the three students who were assassinated from Ayotzinapa took to the streets here in Tixla and protested, marched in the streets, and also, as I mentioned, burned the ballots. And there was a very, very heavy police and military force in the area. There's thousands of police. I can't even tell you how many, because they were in, hiding in many different areas, preventing the students and the families from leaving the area of Tixla. They had planned to go to other parts of Guerrero to also organize against the elections, but could not leave this rural area where we are right now. And Saturday night, as the parents of these Ayotzinapa students were realizing a rally right in the town square, mm-hmm. There was a blackout, and it was an intentional blackout. There was no reason. It wasn't related to the weather conditions, and there was really a fear that at that moment would be when the police would come in and take over the town, or and also the military. And then the lights went back on about half an hour later, and then there was another blackout.
So given all these mobilizations, protests, and this the disdain for Peña Nieto's political party, is it surprising that he won?
Mexico is a very divided and unequal country, and there's, millions and millions of poor people. So often what the political parties do is they buy the vote. And then also there are people who certainly legitimately vote for the PRI. I mean, and this is one thing that was very central issue during Peña Nieto's campaign, is against the huge media conglomerates, mostly Televisa, which has close relationships to Peña Nieto and is always, speaking very, very positively of the PRI and of Peña Nieto and all, the politicians that are in power. And that is the only media that millions and millions of Mexicans receive.
Where does this corruption in Mexico stem from exactly? It almost seems endemic of the country, and just for listeners who aren't too familiar with how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an essential part of the system. The corruption is very, very deep trenched. I mean, one of the things why organized crime can have so much power in Mexico is because of the complicity of the police in many different states across Mexico. And the police receive just a little over minimum wage. So it makes total sense. Minimum wage you cannot live on in Mexico. Minimum wage is less than $5 a day. But also, I mean, it's just that politicians' campaigns are financed by organized crime. Here in Guerrero, I think it was 60% or some really large percent of local presidents here in Guerrero, Mexico, have direct links to organized crime. So they receive money from the organized crime groups for their campaigns. And then once they're in power, they're maintained by the organized crime groups and allow them to operate and do whatever they want.
That's enormous. How do you believe that human rights violations of torture, kidnappings, killings by the state, as we've seen in the lead up to the elections with the police, the cartels against the citizens, will cease? Do we need like a complete overhaul of the government for this to happen?
I mean, for my personal perspective, I mean, I think that the system is so corrupt that there's not any way of changing it. I mean, I think this is, you know, really that it's not right now. There's in Mexico, I mean, there's a lot more diversity of political parties than, say, in the U.S. or even in Canada. But that the political parties, I don't believe that, you know, there being a new political party will really change things in Mexico, because the corruption, as I mentioned, is so entrenched. But I don't have faith that the change will be coming from these political parties or any new alternative political parties.
So where do you think that the change will come from?
I mean, I think that the change will come from the people and are starting to have kind of more popular councils and regional community meetings, and having different communities elect representatives, and kind of having a lot more representative direct democracy, taking an example from the Zapatistas in Chiapas, and actually people, since the disappearance of the Ayotzinapa students, people from movements all across Guerrero have taken over the city halls in their towns and have been holding this kind of representative democracy. People have been choosing, you know, their local delegates from their different communities. And also, just to mention, I realized I forgot to mention this, just one young man, Antonio Viver, who's very active in this movement, was actually killed by police on this Sunday during the elections, when the police and military entered one of the organized neighborhoods where the people were protesting, and had detained a lot of the teachers who were involved in this movement. And then they eventually entered and opened fire, killing this young man. And I went yesterday to his funeral, and thousands and thousands of people turned out in this small town, marching for him and marching for justice. Just as a side note, and I think it's also important to mention the example of the town of Cheran, the municipality, which used to have a lot of trouble with organized crime, and it's a largely indigenous Purépecha town, and the people have kicked out the traditional political parties and now operate on what's called uses and customs, using kind of a traditional indigenous form of government that was used back in the day.
Do you feel like that would be the stepping stone to a more democratic state? Like, is that where you see democracy and peace stemming from in Mexico, and the corruption stopping?
Yes, I think, I mean, it's one thing that is happening, you know, in pockets. So I think, you know, a lot of Zapatistas will tell you that they are living a lot, you know, more peacefully than they were before, but that the government at large is still, you know, on the prowl in their area and trying to continually repress them and take the, you know, the land over and kind of shut down the Zapatista form of democracy. You know, and that's also what we saw here in Guerrero, you know, that I'm mentioning, that there was this young man who was active and he was killed, you know, fighting for this kind of direct democracy, and he was killed by the police. It's a long road. It's not something that could happen, you know, from today or tomorrow. I mean, I think one thing, sadly, I was speaking to another reporter of mine, a friend of mine who was covering Ebola in Africa, and we were talking about the drug war violence and you know, all these massacres and human rights violations in Mexico, and he goes, I really hope that, you know, that's all resolved soon. And I said, you know, I think Ebola will be cured long before the violence will end in Mexico. I mean, it's just getting worse and worse, and while these kind of forms of representative democracy and community councils are very inspiring, it's still, they're in a very small part of the country, and it would be a much, much longer process before it could extend to many other parts of the country and end this kind of deep corruption and violence that persists.
Dagoberto Acevedo, a Mexican who migrated here to Montreal and who is a member of the CEDAW, Le Comité des Droits Humains en Amérique Latine, agreed with Andalusia that change would come from the people, but he believed that the civil society in Mexico is too divided to enact change in the country.
Since I've been here, I've been doing a lot of work in the associative milieu. You gotta develop some links with people, trust, and you gotta talk with people. And I think that's something that is missing in Mexico. It's been a couple of years that I don't live in Mexico, but I can see how people behave. They don't trust each other. There's a lot of fear. Everybody is concerned about money. The economy is not doing very well. So I think that will be the solution for violence. And I don't know how long it will take. It might take 20 years. I think I have the impression that Mexico in 20 years will have something that we see already here in Canada. I'm talking about in terms of this community energy that you don't see very often in Mexico. I was talking with another friend from Mexico the other day, and we were talking about the elections, and the same story. It's like who voted for Dupree and how they won. Again, what the only thing that it's telling me these elections is that we're a minority, a very small minority. Again, the protests are, it will sound a little bit pretentious, but yeah, some of the protests, I was expecting to see more people on the streets, many more people, like probably, I don't know, like 1 million protesting against what is happening with regards to the oil, what is happening with many other things, that is mining companies, many, many things. So I was expecting to see more people on the streets.
So if the humanitarian crisis can't end with the people for the moment, because society is so divided, according to you, how can it end? A lot of actually news sources have been extensively reporting on this new figure called Jaime El Bronco Rodriguez, who survived two drug cartel assassinations in his race as the first independent candidate to win a governor's seat in Nuevo León. And he essentially ousted Peña Nieto's PRI in Nuevo León. And all these news sources like The Telegraph and Latin Times have been claiming that his win may be the start of renewal and transformation of political parties in Mexico for the better. So what do you think about that?
I think it's a very good thing that they let him win. I'm surprised why they let this guy win the elections. And I'm very glad that he won the elections, not because of him. Just the fact that it could be the next time it could be someone else with more proposals and with a very serious or a more structured way of doing things. I think that might be the solution for not just for Nuevo León. I think that might be the solution for other states in Mexico. And I hopefully, yeah, the government will allow the voter allow the people to elect our politicians.
So you think this will make a difference in terms of stopping all this corruption and violence with political parties?
I don't think so. I think this is just the beginning. I think, as I said, I think it will take probably two decades more to get something more we were expecting since a couple of years ago. I think this is a good beginning.
What can listeners do to involve themselves with this issue and pay heed to the humanitarian crisis in Mexico?
Someone from a very good friend from Canada asked me the same question a couple of months ago, and I said, well, one of the things you can do, it's not traveling to Mexico. It's a short-term solution.
You mean like not going on vacation or something?
Not going,
like that?
Yeah, like okay. Not promoting these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's probably one of the things, probably not helping to the economy of Mexico, realizing that it's a violent country. You see, you're probably giving money to the narcos, to the politicians. When you go there, it's you just see the surface. What I'm doing right now, and what I can suggest to the people here, the people from Quebec, from Canada, and Mexicans who are there, getting involved in organizations like the CEDAL. That's one of the examples. You can do a lot of things. You can write your ideas, collaborating in journals, going to conferences. I think raising awareness of what is happening in Mexico, because that was one of the stories. We still believe in that Mexico is a safe country. And part of the movement right now, it's let's try to take off Mexico from this list of the safe countries that Canada consider they are safe. We have a state of law. Which is completely wrong, those kind of things, and we need to rise awareness among Canadians and Quebecers